The malt shop, you know, it's a lot of people to name. It's too many. But you know, we do this for you. Shout out to all of you, our WHO follower listeners who tune in. You know, 2018 was good, but we gonna make 2019 better. You know, bigger and better things. You know, bigger and better things are coming. You know, I got lots of stuff planned for 2019 that I want to do. So I want y'all to stay tuned and keep rocking with me. You know, things may get a little rocky, things may be a little slippery, but we gonna get it. We gonna do it. 2019, we got it. We going big. We climbing that ladder all the way up. I keep telling y'all, the house party, we going number one, baby. We going number one. We about to hit that number one spot. You know, Ludacris, that song, number one spot. Yeah, we about to grab that number one spot in 2019. So I want to shout out to everybody that support Baby B, watches my lives. You know what they tell me, the house party is good. Keep doing what you're doing. So you know what, I'm gonna keep doing what I do. As long as y'all keep supporting me, I'm gonna keep doing this. You know, shout out to my big sister Charmaine, you know, over there with those massages. Make sure y'all hit her up. Go shout out to Charmaine. Make sure y'all hit her up. Y'all can follow me on Instagram, WHFR_BabyB. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Remember, prayers go up, blessings come down. Until next week, I'm out. Peace. Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. Where local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. As we did last month, we're switching gears again today to delve into the other paranormal phenomenon to see if perhaps there is a connection to UFOs and spiritual phenomena. Our guest today is Mac Maloney. Mac has written more than 50 novels, including the best-selling Wingman series, as well as two nonfiction books, UFOs in Wartime and Beyond Area 51. In fact, he is the author of more than 40 books and counting. Before writing books full-time, Mac was a sports columnist covering the Boston Red Sox and the Boston Celtics. He was also a public relations supervisor for the General Electric Company. He's a graduate of the Suffolk University School of Journalism and earned a graduate degree in film from Emerson College. He's the host of a weekly nationally syndicated radio show, Mac Maloney's Military X-Files, and has worked as a columnist. He's worked as a consultant to the U.S. government on anti-terrorist programs. His most recent book is Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe. The book contains stories on UFOs, ghost planes, ghost ships, haunted battlefields, NASA conspiracies, and the breakdown of every monster in America, state by state. Mac has been on this show quite some time ago, but we're happy to have him back with us, so welcome to the show, Mac.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, I appreciate you coming back. It's been a little while, so your new book deals with hauntings, is that correct?
Well, yeah, for many of the stories in it deal with hauntings. Basically what it is I've had, for years, I had just boxes and boxes of research building up in my office here of all strange stories that I had come upon over the years, research that, you know, didn't quite make it into UFOs in Wartime and another book I did called Beyond Area 51. And also I worked for a while for Turner Broadcasting for one of their websites called Conspiratorium. We would come up every month, we'd come up with 10 strange stories, basically writing the captions for photographs, and that would go on the website. And so there was a lot of research I did for that, too, that, you know, just never made it into the specific subject we were covering that month. So I just gathered all this together and put it into book form, and the result is about 250 stories about just different things, as you said, you know, haunted ships, haunted airplanes, haunted battlefields, ghost stories, monsters, American monsters, real TV, real movie monsters, just odd stuff, stuff that has struck me odd over the years, and so we just kind of put in this compilation, and
All right.
We named it Haunted Universe.
Yeah, when you were on last, you expressed the theory that the occupants of these UFOs are actually time travelers. Do you still hold to that theory?
You know, I do, because just if, you know, the idea that I just can't get out of my mind is that when we were doing UFOs in Wartime, we just dealt with, you know, literally hundreds of reported sightings of UFOs during wartime, and especially World War II with the Foo Fighters.
Right.
You know, in none of those instances did we have any stories about any kind of gunplay back and forth between, you know, our military aircraft shooting at the UFOs or vice versa. They were always just there kind of observing, in my mind. And I just think there's I think it's not a bad theory that, you know, possibly they're time travelers from our own future coming back and watching history as it's being made.
Very, very, very possible. But, you know, there's that old saying, you go back in time and you kill your grandfather, then you wouldn't be there to go back in time and kill your grandfather.
Right. So, right. Yeah, there's definitely some problems to be worked out. But you know, it's funny because someone said the other day to me, well, if I could do that, I would go back and see a Shakespeare play. And other people have seen, you know, things like that. But then we say, well, how come, you know, there isn't any reports of, you know, a million people at a Shakespeare play? So, you know, the whole time travel thing, you know, that whole kind of parallax thing is still has to be worked out. But, you know, Einstein believed it was possible, so why not go with him, you know?
Right. You see a lot of these pictures on YouTube and what have you about people, allegedly a time traveler back in, you know, somebody had a cell phone or a camera in his hand when Abe Lincoln was giving his address, you know, and I'm sure that's hoaxed.
Well, when you see people, you know, supposedly back in the 30s, you know, talking on a cell phone, all I want to know is where's the cell tower?
Really? Really? Yeah. But maybe they're there just to take pictures, you know?
Well, that could be.
Yeah, maybe they're just to take pictures. So anyway, in your book, Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe, you tell the reader about top places to see UFO. Can you elaborate here?
Sure. There's a place in Minnesota called Elk River, and for some reason, lots of people see lots of UFOs there. No one's really sure why. A lot of them have kind of strange shapes to them. People reported in 2008 that they saw a UFO look like a huge jellyfish. Another one, they're shaped with cigars and wings, very large Vs, and they're usually pretty large, much bigger, let's say, than an airliner. Another place, too, is Stephenville, Texas, where there was a huge sighting once again back in 2008. This is the UFO sighting that was very close to George W. Bush's ranch in Crawford, Texas. And people see lots of UFOs out there. Sometimes they see, it seems like jet fighter aircraft are chasing the UFOs. Other times it seems like they're escorting the UFOs. No one knows exactly what's going on there. Mount Adams in Washington State, which was close to where Kenneth Arnold saw the first quote-unquote flying saucers. Between Mount Rainier and Mount Adams, and to this day people see a lot of UFOs in that area. But the best place to go if you want to see a UFO is California. People see more UFOs in California than anywhere else in the country, and a lot of those UFOs are reported out over the Pacific. And a lot of people see them going in and out of the ocean. So, yeah, California, if you want to see a UFO, then head for California.
Right. There's also Gulf Breeze, Florida.
Right, Gulf Breeze, Florida, of course, that's kind of infamous because a few years back now, there was a gentleman who, named Ed Walters, who provided a lot of photographs of very dramatic photographs of UFOs in flight and landing and so on. Later on, those photos were more or less proved to be fakes. But the odd thing is that people who still live around Gulf Breeze, Florida, see UFOs that seem to be very real, and they take pictures of them. And the funny thing is that some of them look like the pictures of the UFOs photographs that were supposedly faked. So who knows what's going on there?
Well, first you said that they were decidedly faked.
Right.
But then you say that there's actual pictures that look like the ones that were...
Right. The ones that Ed Walters, the photographs that he took in the late 80s, they had a very distinctive shape to them. Let's say, an upside-down goldfish bowl or something like that. They weren't your usual kind of flying saucer or cigar-shaped objects. We could spend a whole hour on this particular story, but, later on people found props in the attic of his house that, if you put them together, they basically resemble the photographs that he was shopping around as if they were real. So that whole thing went away, but then in subsequent years, people down there took photographs, and some of these photographs actually look like the craft that he had taken photographs of that later proved to be fake. So, I don't know which. It just keeps going round and round. I don't know what came first.
Right. Well, the I'm not going to think of his name. He's very famous. Austrian or German?
Willie Meyer.
Well, Meyer, yeah. The same thing happened there. They found models.
Same thing. Sure.
And he claimed he was making models of what he actually saw and took a picture of. So which came first, the chicken or the egg, right?
Exactly,
So what do you think about Walters? Do you think it was fake?
Well, I always thought it was, first of all, interesting when his photos came out, also kind of disappointing when they, supposedly proved it as being hoaxes. But then I think it's very interesting that people are seeing objects similar to what he took pictures of. Now, there are some people who think that only certain people can see UFOs, and they're unique, to their experience, So I'm just wondering if maybe people, saw the fake photos and then later on saw things, in their own mind that are real, but that doesn't explain their photographs. So it's a very strange case in Gulf Breeze, no doubt about it.
I guess. Well, that's happened before where it'd be five people in a car and two of them will see the UFO and three will not.
Right. Yes. Right.
It's right in front.
That does happen a lot.
Yeah. So how do you explain that anyway?
Just, you know, we, as you mentioned, we have our own radio show, Mac Maloney's Military X-Files show, and we talk a lot about, you know, are only certain people able to see paranormal phenomena? And, like, I've never seen a UFO. I'm always looking for them, but I've never seen one, and I've been interested in them since I was a kid.
Mm.
Yet I know people who, you know, have never been interested in them, could care less about anything paranormal, and they've had some dramatic sightings. So, you know, that's the question. Does this kind of phenomena just appear to certain people? And if that's the case, then why? What's the answer to that? Why some people and not other people?
Yeah. Yeah, well, my sighting was in the presence of my whole family, but it was just accidental, I think, that I was the one that looked out the window and saw this thing.
Right, yeah, sure.
And then, of course, then we all went out and observed it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hundreds of people in the Detroit area observed the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them reported it, and of course they said, they saw this, Northern Lights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were looking at a craft. What are you talking about, Northern
Lights? Right. Well, they always have to come up with something. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So... the Hudson Valley sightings, you know, in the late 70s and 80s, where literally tens of thousands of people saw huge aircraft, huge UFOs going over the Hudson River. People would pull over in the Taconic Parkway and watch these things go overhead, you know, almost every day for several weeks.
Right.
So the other thing, too, that I've kind of learned from doing UFO research is that people seem to think that UFOs, you know, kind of hide from us, you know, but, you know, they don't. They're around all the time. People see them all the time.
That's right. And then there's the invisible ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can pick them up in infrared and FLIR, mm-hmm. the FLIR cameras.
Right,
pick
yep.
them up.
What would like in infrared, yep.
But you can't see them with the naked eye, and they're not in the visible light spectrum, but they are
strange.
So maybe that's by design on their part. What do you think?
Well, you know, why not? You know, I mean, if they have the technology that we think they do, if they are, you know, actually entities from somewhere else, I don't think that, you know, having you know, existing out of our visual range is a big stretch for them.
No, no. In fact, our technology, we dabble in invisible technology, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible. I mean, if they're hundreds, maybe thousands of years ahead of us,
right?
Technologically.
Well, let's say, you know, I mean, the military, U.S. military, already has things that, you know, can make tanks invisible, can make individual soldiers invisible,
right?
You know, so if we can do it, you know, I'm sure that they'd have no problem doing it,
right? Where the light is bent around the object,
right.
And you're not seeing through the object, you're seeing around the object.
Right. Yeah. It's one of those things you kind of have to see it to believe it, mm-hmm. and to kind of understand how it works. But they do have cloaks for soldiers, for instance, that when they put the cloaks around, they're able to bend the light around it, and so they kind of just blend in with the background.
Right.
Really kind of a, you know, astounding technology when you think about it.
Right, something right out of Harry Potter, huh?
Right, or something, yeah.
So I need to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. That's 89.3 FM. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mac Maloney about his... most recent book. He's written several, but his most recent book is Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe. And let's kind of switch gears here and let's go into the haunting activity that you discussed in your latest book. Give our listeners a few examples, if you would.
Wow. Well, you know, there's a number of stories about, like, for instance, haunted ships, and, you know, we kind of use that as a catch-all phrase, but, you know, one of the ones that kind of sticks out for me was a fishing ship that was fishing off the west coast of Australia, and it was a Taiwanese fishing ship, and you know, people would, as ships do, when they would pass each other, they would, you know, radio each other and so on. It's kind of like the code of the seas. And another ship just happened to go by, our fishing vessel went by this fishing vessel, and no one was on board. They went on kind of like a rescue crew, went onto the ship. It was called the Aim High 6. And everything was the way it should be, you know, food, warm, and no signs of any kind of struggle or emergency. It's just that the crew was gone. And so they sent out search parties and so on. For 10 days, nothing happened. But during this whole time, these kind of mysterious calls were being made on a cell phone belonging to the ship's engineer. Hmm. And the rescuers were trying to key in on them, could never find the phone. And then finally those phone calls stopped as well. So I don't know, there's just something about that particular one that kind of sticks in my mind as being really kind of odd.
Hmm. You say in that case, there was nobody aboard?
Yeah, there was nobody aboard. It's kind of like the Celeste, the Mary Celeste, which was another haunted ship back in the 1880s. It was found floating in the Atlantic Ocean. It had been carrying a cargo to, it was a schooner, and they were carrying cargo to Europe, and had a crew of, I think, about seven or so, had a family aboard, and they saw the ship, you know, people passing it, saw this Mary Celeste empty, and finally a boarding party went, and they found absolutely nothing wrong on the ship. There was no signs of like a mutiny or a struggle or an emergency. Literally, there was food on the table and so on, but just absolutely no sign ever of the crew and or the passengers either. So, those stories are not infrequent where people just go on and they go ships. They're running, they're still going, but there's no people aboard.
Wow. And that also happens in the Bermuda Triangle, doesn't it?
It happens a lot down there. Yep, it sure does. There's no doubt about it. Exactly why, no one can really figure out, though. There's a lot of theories. And just, you know, why you brought that up, I'll mention that in this book, you know, we talk about how the U.S. Navy's Area 51, you know, believe it or not, is in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. It's on the Bahamian island of Andros. It's where the U.S. Navy tests secret weapons, and we really don't know what else. Lots of people see USOs down there, those unidentified submerged objects coming out of the water. I mean, over the years, there's been thousands and thousands of UFO sightings right in this particular area in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle where the U.S. Navy has its Area 51.
Where the U.S. Navy has its Area 51.
Right, you know, the U.S. Navy's version of Area 51. There's a trench between Florida and the Bahamas where the Gulf Stream has been going up for, you know, millions, billions of years.
Right.
And it's created a trench.
Right.
So we bring our submarines there, U.S. Navy, and they're able to go down very deep close to this island and, you know, do monitoring of different technologies and so on. But on top of that, people in that area also see lots of UFO activity. So, you know, I think, a lot of people kind of make a connection between that secret base and all these UFOs people see flying around down there.
Right. Huh. I'm going to have to study up more on that because
it's called AUTEC. The name of the place is AUTEC, AUTEC. And it's been down there for, you know, maybe about 20 years now, I think. I've talked to people who have been there. They couldn't tell me what they were doing there, but, it exists. There are theories that maybe there are tunnels underneath there where our nuclear subs can go in and out without being detected by Russian satellites and so on. It's a very strange place. You hear very little news about it, but it's out there.
Right. Well, you'd think there'd be some whistleblowers coming out of there, don't you think?
Well, you know, it's funny about this place because there has been. People have pointed out over the years, and when I say there's a lot of UFO activity down there, I mean, because there's a lot of people visiting the Bahamas on boats and so on and so forth, you know, out on the beach late at night, a lot of opportunities to see UFOs. And sure enough, as I say, there's been literally thousands and thousands of UFOs reported down there over the years. But this Odtech has very sensitive equipment, sonar equipment, where they can hear literally, it's so sensitive that the sonar equipment we have down there can hear Russian bombers flying over Norway, if you can imagine that.
Wow.
They pick up the vibrations all the way, you know, half a world away. And they also have billions of dollars worth of radar down at Odtech, yet the Navy says, you know, we never see any UFOs, we never pick them up, and so on. So there's one or two questions, you know, you want to ask is, well, are you lying about not seeing UFOs, or is all this equipment you have there ineffective? You know, because if it could do what you said it can do, costing billions of dollars, you should be seeing all of these UFOs because people see them in the naked eye. So when you really think about that, you think, well, the Navy must be hiding something.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. The Navy's part of the military. Military is part of the government.
Right.
You can connect the dots yourself, you know. So, yeah, last month we had John Robinson on the show, who wrote a book on Michigan hauntings. It also touched on the UFO topic. And I asked him, and I'll ask you too, as I do most of our guests, do you think there's a connection between UFOs and the spiritual dimension?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that there's a good chance that there is. Another topic we talk about on our show a lot, we call it the unified theory of the paranormal, where there's a chance that, and there are a lot of people who believe this, that UFOs are connected to ghosts, ghosts are connected to the Loch Ness Monsters, you know, connected to Bigfoot, that it's all part of the same thing.
Right.
And if that is true, I mean, just think of the ramifications of that, that you know, what people see, what people experience, whether it be seeing Bigfoot or seeing a ghost or seeing UFO, wouldn't it be interesting if it was really just all part of the same thing? Whatever that thing is, we don't know. But, you know, there's a lot of evidence that kind of leading toward the, that kind of idea these days.
Right. So it's possibly and probably other dimensional in nature, in origin.
You know, something along those lines. We have stories in the book about, for instance, the ghost flyers of 1933, where people up in this very, very remote part of Sweden, up near the Arctic Circle, started seeing these airplanes that, you know, simply it simply didn't exist. There's no other way to describe it. They were enormous airplanes. They had 8 propellers on them. They had pontoons. They had a twin boom tail section. They would fly around with huge searchlights shining down, and they would fly around mountains. They would fly around villages. They would fly around railroad intersections in the middle of blizzards and so on. And no one had an airplane like this in 1933. Nobody did. But lots of people saw them, and people saw more than one. They would see them flying in formation. And it just seems like one of these things that they were just like a little bit ahead of their time, or just from a place a little bit different from where we are. And somehow they were here, and then they disappeared. No one ever found out what they were about, you know, who they belonged to, who was flying them. And it just seems like they came from, quote-unquote, someplace else. It's the really only explanation when you think about it. And there's a number of stories like that in the book, things kind of out of time, out of place.
Yeah, I did a little study on those unidentified machines back then, and I thought maybe there were Zeppelins, you know, the early Zeppelins.
Yeah, the scare ships in 1909, people in the UK started seeing what they thought at first were Zeppelins, these enormous airships going overhead. But there were, and people saw them for about 6 months everywhere in the UK.
Yeah.
And the media dubbed them the scare ships. But they weren't Zeppelins, because at the time, the Zeppelins in 1909, they were just barely flying on tethers. They certainly couldn't make it all the way down to the United Kingdom and back. And also, people would track, some reporters actually tracked one of these things to see how fast it was going. One reporter was in a town, he saw it, he messaged ahead to another reporter who's in another town 20 miles downrange. And by, you know, kind of calculating when the first reporter saw it and to the when the second reporter saw it, they figured out these things were going 250 miles an hour. And even today, blimps can't go more than like 60 or 70 miles an hour. They're lighter than aircraft. Mm. So lighter than air aircraft. So, you know, how could something so enormous go so fast in 1909?
Right.
You know, once again, it seems like they were just from some, and then they completely went away. It just seems like they were from, you know, someplace else.
Right. And then some of them were traveling horizontally, and all of a sudden they'd tip and they'd be vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And try that with a Zeppelin, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly. It's one of the first reported instances of people seeing men in black because, you know, when people would see these scare ships, they would also frequently report seeing men in black and on the ground, like the next day or something. There was always that kind of idea that you know, whoever were flying these things were able to put people in the ground. But once again, no one ever came forward after they went away. No one ever came forward and said, oh, you know, I mean, even years later, no one ever said, oh, yeah, we were behind the scare ships. They were this, this, and this. No one ever did it. They just disappeared.
It just vanished. So are you familiar with Skinwalker Ranch in Utah?
You know, a little bit. We talk about that on the on the show. And all kinds of obviously strange things have happened there, for sure.
Yeah. Cryptozoology and other dimensional beings. And
right, yep.
Tell me about your show.
Well, it's called Mac Maloney's Military X-Files, and I host it with two co-hosts, a gentleman named Juan Juan and a gentleman named Commander Cobra. They're military veterans. Commander Cobra that's not his real name, of course. He still works, missions for the military as a contractor. He brings a lot to the show because he knows a lot of people that we can talk to in the military and in the three-letter agencies. So that's basically what we do every week. We're on a number of different networks, Doc Mather Network and KCOR in Las Vegas, 2 hours of just trying to figure out, you know, the UFO puzzle, basically. And we try to separate all the noise from, you know, what are really the facts and then talk about the facts.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you have a lot of whistleblowers on your show.
Well, we whistleblower is not quite the word. And what we do, one thing that we can say about our show is that when we have people on and we say that they have worked for the three-letter agencies, let's say, you know, they have. And I've listened to other shows, and I've heard people, you know, claim that they've been this and that. But when you've been around the real ones, you know, for a while, you can kind of tell when the poses are speaking. You can tell that, you know, they're kind of making it up and using different words in the wrong way or whatever. But
okay.
I'll just tell you real quick, we had someone on who, you know, works for a company who works for the three-letter agencies in the United States government. And they went to a symposium on that they would, every year they would have these symposiums down in Washington, D.C., where they'd have people from the State Department and the FBI and the CIA and NASA and all these different agencies. They'd put them in a room, representatives from these agencies. They'd put them in a room. They'd give them a problem to solve. How would you solve this? The military and so on. And, like, usually the problem is a hijacked airliner or if terrorists took over a cruise ship, that kind of stuff. And they all kind of work together to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the last time he went, which was last summer, the problem was, you know, what would happen if the U.S. military, U.S. government recovered a UFO? And he couldn't believe it. He you know, he'd been going to these things for years, and usually they're very conservative and so on and so forth, and all of a sudden they drop this thing in their lap. And, he was there for 3 days working on it, and he told us on the air that he just felt there was something. He says, I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop, because this is kind of a way to get everyone kind of expecting, you know, something like this. Mm-hmm. It's just a very odd problem for this group of people to work on.
Well, I've said for a long time that I think the government, or the powers that be, I shouldn't say the government, because I don't think they're really the powers that be, but whoever, they're trying to prepare us for contact.
Mm-hmm. And I think so. You know, I've said this on the show, our show, many times, and I said in the books, I don't believe the U.S. military knows what UFOs are.
No.
I don't think anyone knows what UFOs are.
No.
But I know that they have a lot more evidence that they exist, mm-hmm, than they're telling us. There's just, you know, no doubt about it, you know. But I just don't feel that they have this secret that everyone thinks that they have. On the other hand, combined with what I just told you, that our friend told us in the Tic Tac video that came out now about a year ago of the F-18 Navy pilot seeing,
right,
this very strange thing flying.
Right.
It just does seem that, you know, this is how you want to, you know, for, let's say, propaganda purposes or whatever, you just kind of dribble out little stories,
yeah,
every once in a while, and they kind of build up and get people ready for, you know, the next shoe to drop, maybe. So, you know, who knows? But I agree with you. I think that there's some kind of a program out there that is kind of setting us up for something,
right,
at some point.
I forget exactly what number it is, but it's in the fireman's manual, something about how to deal with a UFO crash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, are you familiar with that?
Yep. You know, and I think it's actually in a federal government handbook.
Right.
Right. You know, and it's just one of many things. You get a flood, a tornado, whatever, and one of the instances is, you know, how do you deal with, as you say, some kind of an aircraft, some kind of a machine that is, you know, obviously not from this earth. How do you, you know, what happens if it happens to you? So, once again, an interesting subject to cover.
Right, and you could also argue that the government, and this is true, they also have a plan on how to handle the zombie apocalypse. You know?
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They had that.
I hope that's a good plan.
Any and all contingencies, you know. So you can argue if they have the plans for the zombie apocalypse, why not for a crashed UFO, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But there's really no other than the show The Walking Dead, which unfortunately is going off the air now. there is, and I doubt if there ever will be, a zombie apocalypse, but there is plenty of evidence to suggest there have been crashed or landed UFOs.
Well, I think that there is, I can't agree that there is plenty of evidence.
Okay.
I think there's plenty of evidence that UFOs exist. There's plenty of footage, film footage and video footage. You know, once again, going back to the book, we do a story about Gordon Cooper, who was one of the first American astronauts, the first seven Mercury astronauts, along with John Glenn and people like that.
Right.
Very high-profile guy.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning of the 50s, he was a fighter pilot in Germany, and this was during the Cold War, and he reported seeing UFOs flying over his base in Germany almost on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
They were flying too high to be intercepted by their jet fighters. So he says a lot of times we just stayed on the base and watched these things go up with binoculars. And then you fast forward to about 7 or 8 years, and he's at a secret base in California. And he's supervising a crew that is setting up a camera on a runway, and they pick up on film a UFO landing at this base and then taking off and flying away again. They come and they report to him. They tell him it's all on film. he calls a phone number in the Pentagon that you're supposed to call, quote-unquote, in circumstances like this. They tell him, put the film on the general's airplane and fly it, you know, to Washington, D.C. immediately. So he does all this, and he expects to be called before some kind of a commission or a hearing or whatever to explain what he knows, what he saw, what his men saw. He was never called. He never heard anything more about it. You know, after he sent that film to Washington, and two, 3 or 4 years later, he's one of the Mercury astronauts. So Gordon Cooper certainly knew that the U.S. government had more evidence that UFOs exist. But I don't think he thought, and I don't either, that they know, you know, where they come from, but definitely have a lot of evidence that they exist.
If I remember that story, Gordon Cooper actually saw the landing. And they were...
His men, he was supervising this, putting this camera out in this...
Right.
Yeah, and this, on a runway to it was a piece of equipment to, so student landing, people who are just learning how to land jet fighters, you can grade them and you can show them, you know, where their mistakes were and stuff like that. And it was on that film, on that camera that, yeah, this UFO just landed and then took off again, so... You know, what was that in the middle of a, you know, a highly secret base and so on? Send the film to Pentagon. I got a kick out of the idea that there's here's a phone number you call in case something like that happens. What was that?
Yeah. In case of a zombie apocalypse, you call that number, right? I need to take another moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. That's 89.3 FM. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with author, UFO researcher, Mac Maloney. And Mac, we were talking about the evidence on crashed disks, crashed UFOs. You're familiar with Sergeant Clifford Stone, right?
You might have to remind me of that.
Okay, he's a Disclosure Project member, and he claims to have been part of the secret recovery team of UFOs. In other words, his job was not specifically, he didn't sit around waiting for UFOs to crash.
Right.
But when there was a UFO crash, they snatched him up, and he went out and cleaned up, so to speak.
Right. Well, I don't want to be the buck of the cold water, you know, but, you know, I don't believe any of that. Yeah,
really?
I don't think any such team existed. I don't think the U.S. military had anything like that.
Hmm.
I don't think that there was any recovered crash saucers or disks.
Really?
And only because, I mean, one reason is because if the U.S. government started reverse engineering, if they started reverse engineering flying saucers, let's say in 1947 after Roswell or whatever,
mm-hmm.
we would be living in a different world. We would be living in a world that, you know, that we were utilizing, you know, in some degree, alien technology. But I don't see any of that evidence of that around. Now, people want to say that, you know, microprocessors and semiconductors and so on and so forth, you know, came from, you know, alien reverse alien technology. Sorry. But, you know, you're just kind of dissing the humans who actually invented that stuff. If we had some kind of propulsion unit that UFOs used, and we see UFOs doing really spectacular things, if we had that kind of technology, why did we spend, you know, 20 years, billions of dollars to launch the space shuttle in orbit? That's like launching a dump truck into space.
Really?
Why would we go through all that if we had other kinds of technologies that we could have been using, you know? So I don't think any of that, you know, I like I say, I know I'm like the guy at the party no one wants there, but I just don't think any of that, you know, took place. I think there's a lot of noise out there, as we call it, that is just incorrect information having to do with UFOs. And that, in my opinion, clouds the issue. We're trying to get to the puzzle, trying to figure out the puzzle, what UFOs are. And when there's all this kind of, you know, static and noise out there, that just interferes with, you know, people, real dedicated researchers who want to find out what's going on.
Well, that's...
Once again, my opinion.
Yeah, that's the point of, well, your show and mine as well. That is to weed out the fact from the fiction, you know?
Right, and, right. And there's a lot of fiction out there. And the interesting thing to me, too, is that, you know, we say, yeah, there's 1,000 UFOs are reported around the world every month.
Mm-hmm.
90% of them can be explained, but 10% cannot, you know, and it's that 10% that we should, you know, kind of focus on. The interesting thing is that when we look out there at all this noise, we like to call it, it turns out, you know, that 90% of that is all hokum, too.
Yeah.
It's so you got to concentrate on that remaining 10%, and if you can just prove one is true, then they're all true, you know. But that's, I think, is a big impediment to anyone who seriously would like to research the UFO phenomena. There's just so much static and noise out there that it's a mountain that you have to overcome that you shouldn't have to, but it's the world we live in.
Right. Well, so the book, The Day After Roswell, what do you think of that?
I don't think anything happened at Roswell. I don't think anything happened at Roswell other than what, you know, we were told, you know, very clumsily by the U.S. Air Force, the Army Air Force back then, or the U.S. military, that there was a crash there of a very top-secret balloon, balloons that they were launching from down in that area to fly over the Soviet Union with acoustical devices on there to see if the Soviets were testing nuclear weapons.
Hmm.
They were our allies at the time, so you can see, you know, they were our allies, you know, by name, so you can see why they'd want to keep this, you know, project secret. And it was one of these balloons that crashed there, and the people at the air base there basically came up with a cover story for the balloon crash, and the cover story was we've recovered a flying disc. I just don't think anything happened there. And another reason I don't think so is that, as I said before, I used to read all kinds of UFO books when I was growing up. I grew up in Boston and in the 50s, and there were a lot of them out there, Donald Kehoe's books, for instance. I just read every one of them that I could get my hands on, and Roswell's not mentioned in any of them. It was only later on, late 70s, early 80s, where the National Enquirer got a hold of the story from 1947, and just basically revved it up again, and you know it turned into this you know idea now that there are some books out there saying that you know dozens of UFOs have crashed at Roswell, and that there are dozens of alien bodies, and that the U.S. military killed people to keep them quiet, and so on and so forth. In my opinion, it's just all nonsense. It's the noise that we were talking about. Now, real quickly, if people really want to get into Roswell, there's a ICBM base that was built that was so haunted that as they were building it, so many UFOs used to show up over it at night that guards refused to go out and walk the picket duty around this place. The people who worked there, you know, complained to NICAP and complained to the Pentagon that something very odd is going on here. It's like the most haunted ICBM base ever, and that was in Roswell. That was in Roswell, New Mexico. That's the story we should be looking into. That's the story everyone should be researching, not this, you know, this kind of carnival that, you know, the city of Roswell has become. That, once again, my opinion.
So you say it's haunted.
Right, yeah, haunted.
But
yeah,
then you say there's UFOs over there.
Right, I mean haunted by UFOs, let's put it that way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you say haunted, I think of spirit, you know?
No, when they were building it, you know, again, when they were building it, even before the missiles were in the ground, people started seeing UFOs at night coming, you know, out of nowhere, hovering over this place, and then they would call in jet fighters, and when the fighters would arrive, the UFOs would take off, the fighters would leave, the UFOs would come back.
Yeah.
Kind of like the same old story, you know, but... Yeah. It got to the point where, you know, the Pentagon was certainly aware of what these people were complaining about. And, you know, what they did about it, who knows? A lot of the top brass, they refused to kind of, you know, even you know, give a quote on it, what they thought, and so on and so forth. They really clamped up. But it's just known as a place that, you know, was haunted by UFOs, you know, for a long, long time. And it's in Roswell, New Mexico. I wish that was the case that everyone looked into and, again, instead of this, you know, kind of circus atmosphere that's become, you know, quote-unquote, Roswell.
So if I'm hearing you right, you believe the UFO sightings around the Roswell area. You don't believe the UFO crash story.
Right, right. I mean, I've read stories that they said that among the debris picked up, you know, of this quote-unquote crash UFO at Roswell, there was rope. I just don't think a UFO would have rope aboard.
Rope. Or a type of rope, is it?
Well, yeah. it was the rope from the kite that was underneath this top secret balloon. That's what they found.
Yeah. And then the government came out with all those little bodies they found were actually crash test dummies.
Crash test dummies, for high altitude testing. They would throw dummies out of these high altitude balloons to see, you know, what the effect would be, you know, on people parachuting from high altitudes and, you know, things along those lines.
But then Stanton Friedman has researched that and said, you know, the crash test dummies didn't start until 4 or 5 years after the F-47.
Right. You know, Stanton Friedman and I disagree on a lot of things.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We should have a debate between you and
Stanton. Well, I'd love to debate him. He doesn't want to come on our show. You know, we've asked him a couple times, and I understand that he's kind of like semi-retired and whatever.
Yeah.
We would love to have him on the show for a debate.
Hmm. I wonder if he would agree to come on this show, and we have a conference call.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm available.
You're available for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spring it on him. I want to let him know what's going on. He may well be listening till he gets a show reminder before the show airs. So, Stan, if you're listening, you know, if you're up to it, let's have a debate. Let's hear your facts and rebuttals by Mr. Maloney here. So have you debated him before? I mean, have you?
No.
Have you talked to him about
a lot of his stuff? I, you know, and we've offered, you know, asked him to be on the show, and he's, you know, said no.
Is he aware of your position on Roswell?
I'd be honored if he is, if he does, you know, if he's heard of us, that would be interesting. But there's some reason he doesn't want to come on the show, and he's done other shows before and since. So, you know, maybe he's read, you know, one or two of my books. I don't know. It's kind of a mystery.
Yeah, well, he reads a lot. He reads a lot of these UFO books, so it's very possible. So, before we run out of time, let's go back to your book, you talked about the haunted ships, and what about haunted houses? You go into that.
There's not many haunted house stories in there. We have like haunted battlefields. One of them,
okay,
which really kind of, you know, stuck with me was that in during World War One, there was a, you know, World War One was just like this unbelievable carnage. You know, we know about it, but it's kind of been more people know about World War Two. But World War One was just this horrible, horrible. You know, 5 years of just battling each other from trenches and things like that. Well, in August to November of 1917, there was a huge battle near a place in Belgium. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name. It's a small village. And it was a huge German army on one side, and British and Commonwealth troops on the other side, across a no-man's land. And now this is a battlefield that had been hit with so much artillery that aerial photos later show that it had been hit by, it had a million bomb craters just in 1 mile.
Huh.
That's a lot of bombs, right? A lot of artillery shells. So, and it was very rainy that year, one of the rainiest summers in 30 years. So what happened was it turned all this churned up earth into mud. In some cases, the mud was like 12, 15 feet thick. And what would happen is soldiers would just, you know, make a wrong step, and they would disappear in this mud like this quicksand, you know, never to be seen again.
Mm.
You know, and when the battle was over, 500,000 men on both sides were killed or wounded. and 100,000 of these soldiers, you know, were never identified, never seen again.
Wow.
So you can imagine the horror of something like that. First of all, you're in a war, this horrible war, but as I say, you just take a wrong step or whatever, and you just suck down into this mud, and that's it. You're gone forever. It's a very strange, you know, the haunted mud, we call that. There was another instance in 1915 at a place called Gallipoli, the Battle of Gallipoli, where a hundred-man company of British soldiers just completely disappeared on the battlefield. People saw them walking into the smoke of artillery shells and gunfire, but they never saw them again. And, you know, every once in a while they would stop fighting and both sides were able to take their wounded off the battlefield and have like a truce. They never found one sign of these 100 guys.
Wow.
And at the time, even the guy who was the British commander-in-chief couldn't explain the disappearance. His quote was, you know, a very mysterious thing happened at Gallipoli. We don't know what happened.
Could they have just ran off the battlefield?
Not all 100 of them. I think it would be hard for them to get away.
Unnoticed.
No body parts or pieces of the uniforms or their weapons or anything. Were ever found at these guys. Once again, mystery.
Yeah. Gettysburg is another famous battle. I saw I don't know how real it is, but it certainly looks real, on YouTube, where these guys are out looking for ghosts in Gettysburg. And there are these cannons lined up where they have them out for show, you know. And they're parked along the roadside, decided just to wait and video a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just about to leave the area when all of a sudden this full-bodied apparition of a rebel soldier starts walking around one of these cannons.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time he gets to the other side, he vanishes.
He's gone, yeah. Residual sighting, they call that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're stuck in, you know, whatever happened there.
Right.
Usually with very dramatic events, they're kind of stuck there. They don't see us. We see them. It's almost like a videotape, an old videotape, kind of replaying itself over and over again, you know.
Right, right. And they say in these hauntings, that's a residual haunting. It's something traumatic like that is imprinted on the environment or in the walls.
Uh-huh. Something.
But I don't know about you, but when I record something, it plays back exactly as it was originally recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you get hauntings where, you know, they speak to you or,
right.
You know, this didn't happen this way back when.
Right. People report a lot of residual, you know, hauntings in Gettysburg, but also at the Little Bighorn, at the fort that Custer and his troops left and never came back to.
Right.
You know, they still hear like you know, horses in the stables, kind of, you know, causing a racket. They could see, you know, a widow walking back and forth in front of up in her bedroom in front of like an oil lamp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, residual hauntings are very strange things. It's almost like a glitch in the Matrix or something. You know, it's like like a mistake. You know,
right?
And it just can't be erased from, you know, this part, that part of reality. It's interesting because a lot of times these residual hauntings, as we said before, are in places that had very dramatic effects. You know, like a battlefield, like the Little Bighorn, or, you know, a very haunted house, you know, or you know, I hate to say it, but mental institutions and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, really.
That's where these things seem to happen a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll believe that's possible, the residual hauntings, where it's something traumatic is recorded on the environment or in the walls or whatever. But
right.
When they speak to you and call your name, that didn't happen way back when. So
right, yeah,
that's
I think they call that an intelligent sighting or something, where
right.
the ghost comes and
right.
speaks right to you.
That's right. That's right. So once again, where can our listeners go to check out your work and your book?
Well, you know, to listen to the radio show, just you can go to MacMaloney.com, and there's a list of the networks that we're on. We're heard all over the country. We're also syndicated by Radioactive Broadcasting in San Diego, and they provide content to Armed Forces Radio. Mm-hmm. The book, Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe, the publisher doesn't like us saying this, but, you know, the best place really to get it is on Amazon.com. It's at bookstores everywhere, or you can order it through them. E-books, but also, you know, the book that people like to hold in their hand. So,
right.
Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com is really the best place to get the book.
All right. The book that you people hold in your hand, that's going out, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but you know, I'll tell you one thing real quick is what's happening is Amazon is building bookstores, you know, which is kind of odd because they put bookstores out of business, but now they are building bookstores. Bookstores are coming back because people like to browse in bookstores.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
That's
you
right.
buy something online, you're looking for the title and you buy it. But in these bookstores now, they have those 3D printers where you order a book and they'll print the book in front of you in 2 minutes, and it's your book.
Right.
So that's interesting. That's encouraging too.
Mac Maloney, thank you so much for joining us.
And, thanks, David, for having me on again. I really appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us the first Tuesday of each month at 12 noon, when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
The following program has been pre-recorded. Views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry. Hello, guys and dolls. You are at the malt shop, and Happy New Year's! And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing. The kids are dancing! And here we are, back in the 50s.